Good morning. You've tuned in for North Idaho News of the Week. Oopsies. On January 30th, it's Friday, January 30th, and I'm Jack Peterson. I'm here without Chris Bessel this morning. He's out for the day, feeling a little under the weather, but I am joined by Zach Hagedon, the editor-in-chief of the Sandpoint Reader, coming off of a light week, a week of light duty for you, sir.
I did have the week off. So yeah. Sansare Mitchell, our senior writer, was the guest editor of this week's paper. So I'm a little behind because I was off working on my backyard writing shed.
Ah, how's it coming?
It is complete.
All right.
After good. A long 6 months, I am now ensconced in my backyard writing shed. So it's rare for me to leave.
A little good news, and thank you for stepping out and joining us this morning. Let's see. We're going to start at the state level, as usual, talking about what's going on in the legislature and elsewhere in the state government. The legislative session, which began earlier this month on Monday, January 12th, budget cuts remain front and center. The state agency directors were told this week to submit plans to cut their budget by up to an additional 2% for the current fiscal year. That's in addition to the 3% across the board cuts that Governor Little announced last summer. Jim Woodward, who sits on the JFAC, the Joint Financing Appropriations Committee, is heavily involved in this budgetary process, and he's actually coming to town along with Mark Souder. They're going to be at Sandpoint Community Hall tomorrow at noon. And hey, if you can't attend that town hall in person and ask your question, you can at least tune in. We will be there as well. KRFY is going to be on the scene, and we'll be broadcasting that town hall on these airwaves or streaming it live, and we'll make a recording available later on. However you're listening to this program, you can listen to that as well. So that'll be Woodward and Souder tomorrow afternoon at noon from their town hall at Sandpoint Community Hall, and that we expect to last about 90 minutes. Let's see, here in the county we discussed last week, but in this week's reader, there's a little bit more detail just on that. The Panhandle Bike Ranch, which their building permit was denied 2-0 by the Bonner County Board of Commissioners. So more trouble for the proposed Panhandle Bike Ranch. Or I suppose you could say it's the existing Panhandle Bike Ranch. There are trails there, but they were denied the right or the permit to build a visitor center and restroom on their property. So the trails are in place, but there is no building for those who want to visit. Also, they cannot, I don't think they can issue any kind of fees or charge for people to ride. They can accept donations. So right now it's a series of mountain bike trails that are by donation only. And in other local organizational news, I guess, the East Bonner County Library District announced the approval for the design, or approved the existing design. They approved it for a two-level. It is a 4,456 square foot expansion to the Sandpoint Library that will be located on the northwest corner of the building. If you want some details on what that's going to look like, well, yes, you can open the Reader or the Bee, but also you can go and listen to Chris Bessler's almost an hour of conversation with Library Director Vanessa Velez and Board President Amy Flint about that library expansion and what is going to be there. But in short, we can say large meeting room, an expanded lifelong learning center, as well as a cafe-style meeting place and some staff offices and other things as well. That will be funded primarily by donations and partially by county sales tax revenue here in Bonner County. The city of Sandpoint, the city council did not meet this week. They met last week, and we discussed last week with Jack Freeman a couple of items that were discussed at that nearly 4 hour long county meeting, which must have been on the 21st. Yeah, on
right.
Yeah, yeah.
City meeting.
The city meeting. Sorry, yeah. I said county. Yeah, no, the city meeting, the city of Sandpoint meeting, city council meeting on the 21st, which kicked off the year. And Zach Hagedon also wrote the leadoff story on that, which is in this week's Reader. We'll talk a little bit about that.
I was late to that party because of the fact that it was a 4 hour long meeting.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And your
my press time does not allow for 5 to 6 to 7 hours worth of of deadline writing.
Yeah. The Reader is available on Thursday mornings, bright and early. So it's those late Wednesday meetings sometimes are tough. We'll talk a little bit more about that. We did break down just the details of those votes, though. The big headlines are that the city council, this was last week's news, approved changes to residential lot requirements, which included shrinking the minimum size for a residential lot in a 4-2 split vote. And city council also approved changes to the short-term rental code, implementing new requirements on STRs, as they're called for short, that are those that are operated with no owner living on the property, but removing the 35-unit cap altogether on such short-term rental units. That also was a 4-2 vote, and in both cases it split along the same lines, with Pam Duquette and Kyle Schreiber opposed to both those actions, and council members Deb Rule, Joel Espiro, Rick Howarth, he's no longer on council, Joe Tate and Joshua Torres voting in favor. But that's there's more details to that story than just the 4-2 vote. It's a little more complicated than that, but that is the bottom line, is that in both cases those passed. Coming up for city council, and this is what we're going to talk about a little bit today, city council is poised to make a decision regarding the City Beach RV park at the Wednesday, February 4th meeting. We'll see.
they may not be poised to make a decision based on the staff report that we received yesterday.
Yeah. So just the RV park, the proposed RV park. Let's go back in time and tell the tale here. This RV park, it's an area of land that was once an RV park, was once operated as an RV park, and it was I think most recently or somewhat recently operated by the Best Western Edgewater Hotel that is still there when they owned the property, I think.
Well, we had the land swap.
Right. And then they swapped the Then there was a land swap so that the city took over ownership of that land.
So the city previously owned sort of the grassy swale in front of where the Best Western Edgewater is. And those properties were swapped. It was like 2020. I forget exactly what year it was. I feel like it was during the COVID pandemic.
I think you're right.
Time was liminal at that time, but in the near past, those properties were swapped, and the RV park has actually been there for a very, very long time. I seem to recall someone testified at one of the city council meetings in the previous year that at one point it was even a trailer park.
Mm-hmm.
So there has been sort of like temporary living dwelling sort of uses on that property for a long time, at least since the late 90s, maybe even the 80s.
Yeah.
I remember it as a kid, always kind of being what it is now.
Yeah. The land swap happened, and at the same time, or not at the exact same time, but in that time period, a couple other things were happening. There was the downtown redesign kind of competition. There were proposals for the downtown waterfront,
which encompassed sort of City Beach, and also the formulation of the Parks and Rec master plan, which envisioned, you know, changes to various public parks throughout the city. So not just City Beach. I mean, they looked at Memorial Field, like, we see the new parking lot, the boat launch stuff, like everything that happened out at Memorial Field was part of that process. They looked at, you know, sort of Great Northern and the sports complex, and City Beach was a part of that. So there was a lot of visioning exercises that went on at the same time.
Yeah.
And the land swap, I think, was part of that sort of broader conception of how to reorient and renovate and rehabilitate as need be City Beach.
Yeah.
So now all those conversations, some of them kind of went by the wayside. The downtown waterfront design competition was shelved.
Yeah.
More or less with the incoming Mayor Jeremy Grimm administration and the departure of our former city administrator, Jennifer Stapleton, who kind of shepherded a lot of that. So it was sort of felt, I think, by the electorate and also by the new administration, the Grimm administration, that that project was not worthwhile to pursue because it was so cost intensive, really. And what we are left with is the Parks and Rec Master Plan.
Yeah.
Which, you know, in itself is very ambitious. So we're kind of at a crossroads where we got to figure out what we want to do with that space. And complicating matters is, of course, the Avril Hospitality luxury hotel development north of that site across Bridge Street.
Yeah. So in 2022, Avril Hospitality purchased that, the what is existing as the Best Western Edgewater Hotel. Avril Hospitality out of Northwest Montana operates some luxury resorts in kind of similar communities to Sandpoint. I think Whitefish most prominently, and I think that's where they're headquartered. And Avril Hospitality made this, had purchased that and has been intending to build to completely demolish the existing hotel and build something new there. I think you were the one who got some details, the latest plans for the size of that. It's
right,
5-story, 226,000 square foot hotel that includes 162 guest keys. Construction valued at $57 million, and that's at that current site. Avril Hospitality has maintained it since, I guess, 2022, or their position has been that RV park, which is just across the Bridge Street from their proposed hotel, would be detrimental to the hotel business, and they have over the years made a variety of, I guess, comments about that and proposals for what else could be done about that, that would not be an RV park.
Well, I think the shorthand description of their feeling about that is that if they're going to attract the kind of clientele that they are sort of targeting with their development, those kinds of guests don't want to look out their window or drive by, you know, an RV park.
Yeah.
So aesthetically, they don't like it. And they've been pretty clear about that. In fact, so clear on that they had to apologize at a council meeting in the late 2025 for a letter that was sent that had some pretty indelicate, sort of direct, blunt language threatening that, you know, the project itself would be unviable if that RV park stayed. They've moderated that tone over the past couple of months and, you know, tried to kind of make amends and sort of like apologize for being so sort of forceful about it, but they have not changed their tune.
Yeah.
Ultimately. I mean, they don't want an RV park there. They want a multi-use something, you know, whether it be boat launches, whether it be, you know, improved parking facilities, whether it be some kind of, you know, multi-use park, like event area, community
pavilion or something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There have been a lot of ideas floated, and we had a big community workshop that the city hosted at the James E. Russell Center in sort of mid-December, where some of these ideas were workshopped. The city had a big survey that they put out in the late last year that got about 900 and something responses, which is pretty big for a city survey.
Yeah.
And then that's a sizable sample size. And the responses to that survey were overwhelmingly in favor of keeping the RV park and using a $950,000 Idaho State Department of Parks and Rec grant to sort of improve what we have,
right,
as opposed to changing it.
And that grant was applied for and has been approved. So, I mean, that is money that we would be, if it weren't going to be used on an RV park, that money would be, I guess, turned away.
According to how I understand it, yeah. Mm-hmm. So one of the conditions of that grant authority is that it would have to remain that same use.
Mm-hmm.
So if we take the money, it has to remain sort of in that RV park sort of use for 25 years.
Okay.
And that's kind of made some people balk.
Yeah.
The idea of taking that money, because it's like, well, do we want to corner ourselves into having an RV park down there for 25 years?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the open question, I guess. And that's, Avril Hospitality would say, no, you don't want to have an RV park there for 25 years. We don't want one.
Sure.
Some members of the community also agree that it could be used to a different use. The other part of it, too, is that the Parks and Rec Master Plan that I alluded to earlier doesn't necessarily say that we should have an RV park there. So according to the city's own like future planning, there is the possibility of not having an RV park there. So we're kind of left with this sort of question of, do we stick with what we have, improve it, you know, go ahead with state funding at a time when state funding is going to become difficult to come by.
Yeah.
You know, with the budget issues that the legislature is dealing with, do we take advantage of that availability of those funds? Or do we go with some alternative plan? And if we go with an alternative plan, what is that plan going to be? And Avril has sort of stepped in and said, we're willing to pony up some cash to make this something that we feel like benefits the community, but also benefits us.
Yeah.
And that's what's the content of the staff report that the Sandpoint City Council is reviewing. That came out yesterday. So prior to our reporting, we didn't have access to that information. So that's breaking news.
Yeah.
Is that there is actually a proposal on the table from Avril Hospitality to give $950,000 of their own money.
Right.
To the city.
The equivalent to the amount that the grant would be.
Right.
Yeah.
And it should be noted too that the, you know, the city would also throw the city, if it took the state grant, the $950,000, the city would also throw in $50,000 from its own parks budget.
Okay,
so we're talking about $1 million.
Yes,
$950,000 of it from the state, $50,000 from us. Avril's saying they'll give $950,000 of their own money if we just please don't make it an RV park.
Basically, yeah. Now, but that's not all they're saying. I mean, especially in this latest item that it was attached to the agenda for the upcoming February 4th meeting, they're offering to contribute $950,000 of their own money to balance out the lost grant from the state, and they have, according to the staff report. The forthcoming staff report, I guess, they've also indicated a willingness to contribute approximately $50,000 annually towards replacing a portion of the revenue currently generated by the RV park. The mayor, when he was most recently on these airwaves, and I think in conversations with your paper as well, has said that, I mean, he's fiscally minded about thing, and that is one of the areas of city government that actually brings in revenue. And
it's the second most profitable public park that we have.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to say it costs like $110,000 or grosses $110,000 a year.
Yeah.
We spend about $20,000 a year maintaining it. And so, you know, we bring in $80,000-ish every year, just from the fees that are generated from people staying at that park.
Right.
So it is a sizable contribution to the city budget. And those dollars go into the Parks Improvement Fund.
Mm-hmm.
So those dollars get sort of spread across the city's parks inventory. We don't want to lose that revenue. So that's also part of the consideration is like, well, if we stick with what we have and we make it better.
Yeah.
You know, put some bathrooms in there, you know, true up the parking situation, like improve the pavement. I don't know. I mean, like, we don't have like a concrete plan or a vision really, but some things have been floated out there, like just making it a nicer space, formalizing it in a way, I suppose you could put it. Then we might be able to increase our revenue, and then we'd be guaranteed, you know, because it's within the city's sort of structure.
Yeah.
That we retain that property as a public property with money that we control that comes into our budget. So that's one argument for keeping it, for going with the state grant. The other argument is, you know, you go with Averill, you take their money, but then you're also sort of like engaged with a private entity.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking about in that one of their proposals, you know, it's like a 30-year rent-free lease.
Right.
That's, so they get involved with sort of management of this public space, you know, that we already went through a land swap with. So I think that rubs a lot of people the wrong way, the idea of engaging with a private entity to manage public property. And it gives some uncertainty about whether or not we're going to be guaranteed a revenue source going forward. I mean, could they pull out? I mean, who knows? It's all very early days.
Yeah. Let me run down the bullet points just of what they are offering or what they're asking for in exchange for their you know, basically $1 million contribution plus $50,000 annually. They are asking for, in exchange for that, they are asking for a 30-year rent-free lease of 20 boat slips located at the dock area at the south end of the RV park site. That's those first two rows of docks, of boat docks, basically, right, in the City Beach Marina area. And then continued use of the 5 slips historically used by the hotel under a lease agreement dating from 2007 to 2017. I think that must be the slips in Windbag Marina, I'm guessing. I'm not actually sure about which 5 slips those are, but 5 additional slips bringing that total to 25. Rent-free use when scheduled in advance of any community event space constructed using those funds for hotel-related events. So I guess, as I read that, I'm guessing there would be the usual rental process that most city facilities use, like the pavilion at City Beach that exists, or if you want to rent Sandpoint Community Hall, and Averill Hospitality would just not have to, their fees would be waived if they were the entity that would be renting that space. Commitments to City Beach Park and Marina improvements that would benefit the hotel, including maintenance of the beach area in front of the hotel and eventually improvements to docks in the Windbag Marina, and consideration of how a previously anticipated $400,000 parking in lieu payment would be applied, noting that these funds were originally anticipated to support RV park parking improvements. So that $400,000 in lieu payment is because Averill Hospitality is not putting in as many parking spots for their hotel as would be required under city code.
Which itself was a controversy last year.
Yes. That's quite a lot that they're asking for. I guess when I read that, my question to you is this sort of an opening bid? This is their wish list, and it's a negotiating position, or is this their final proposal? I mean, is this what they're coming with?
I mean,
now we're speculating.
Now we're speculating.
Yeah, this is okay. Wild speculation. This is not printed anywhere.
No, I don't mind wildly speculating as long as people know that I'm just editorializing here.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like this is probably their wish list.
Mm-hmm.
You know, given the pattern of the way that Averill has interfaced with the city and the community over the past couple of years, they ask for stuff. They ask for a lot of stuff. They get pushback, they dial it back, they sort of like trim it down, whatever. This to me feels like a opening gambit. And the sense that I get too, and I'm sure if there's anybody from City Hall listening to this, and I know they are, they can correct me, but my reading of that staff report that came out yesterday is that even the city is not willing to necessarily make a decision on this on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Reading between the lines, it felt to me anyway, like, the proposal from staff is like, okay, here's what Averill says. Throw it back to Parks and Rec, the Parks and Recreation Commission. have them sort of analyze this new proposal, figure out if this makes sense, and then come back to us with a much clearer sort of recommendation. Mm-hmm. Because the survey results overwhelmingly showed that people want to keep the RV park. They want to use the state money. However, there was a lot of other sort of like wiggle room with other options. So not overwhelming support, but enough support to suggest that there's a divided opinion. And when the Parks and Rec Commission met earlier in January to talk about this, it was a 7-1 vote to recommend taking the state money and going forward with a rehabilitation of the existing RV park. But in the context of their discussions, it was kind of, I guess, clear to city staff anyway, that there were other options that were amenable to people. They felt like there was like, well, we're going to go with this because we don't have anything else to go on. Like, there's no concrete plan. There's no official, at the time, there was no official offer from Averill, with a dollar amount attached, with an actual proposal. So with new information coming to light, you know, from the company, from Averill, as of yesterday, my sense, and again, I could be wrong, I'm just speculating, but my sense is that City Council is going to take this report. They're going to hear a presentation on Wednesday, and they're probably going to refer this back to Parks and Recreation Commission members to analyze this proposal and see if this fits or this works for them, and then come back with another recommendation.
Hmm. Well, okay.
That's just my guess.
Yeah. But we shall see. We don't know for sure what's going to happen.
It's
going to
be an interesting discussion no matter what. I'm sure the council's not going to just take this and then, you know,
not respond.
Punt it back.
Yeah.
They're going to talk about it, and they're going to assess it, you know, on their own merits, you know.
Yeah.
So it'll be a worthwhile discussion no matter what.
Yeah. So big one coming up next Wednesday, February 4th, talking about this. What's going to happen to the RV park and really City Beach and hotel area more broadly?
Well, that's the thing. You talk about an RV park, you know, in sort of a dusty parking lot, and it doesn't sound like the sexiest thing in the world, but really it's kind of it's a hinge. It's sort of a linchpin sort of property that it connects, you know, downtown to the City Beach, and what happens there sort of determines, I guess, the direction and the scope of what's going to happen with City Beach writ large, which is, of course, you know, our most precious public property.
Yeah.
And probably one of the most precious pieces of public property in all of the state. I've lived in Boise. I've been all over this place, this state, and I've never seen anything like City Beach. And the direction that goes, we have this giant, you know, multi-million dollar development going in, and the company has made no secret of trying to influence the future direction of that entire property, you know, from City Beach to Windbag to the RV park. That's their home, right?
Yeah.
And they're apparently the construction valued at $57 million. They want to get as much bang for their buck as possible, and they know where they are. They know what kind of a location that is. And if they can make it, you know, more profitable and more saleable for themselves, they're going to do it. But the conflict and the tension is between the idea of a private entity directing the development of a public property, and especially one so valuable to the community that it has served for, you know, decades and decades.
Well, Mr. Hagedon, once again, we come to 8:30 and then some. So it's time for us to wrap things up here on North Idaho News of the Week. Also on the City Hall, City Council agenda, a discussion of the city's proposed CPACE PACE, the commercial property assessed. Well, it's usually commercial property assessed clean energy, I guess, in the state of Idaho. It's property assessed capital expenditures or something like
don't
that.
Don't ask me, man. I was on vacation all week. Right, I don't know.
That's the item number one on the agenda, I guess. But I believe that's just a discussion without action items on it at this point. And then I'll also mention coming up this weekend, we already said, but tune in tomorrow or come on down in person to town city Sandpoint Community Hall, not Town Hall, not City Hall, Community Hall, to see a town hall with two of our legislators from up here in Legislative District 1. State Senator Jim Woodward and State Representative Mark Sauter will both be there, basically presenting what's their take on what's been going on in Boise, and also taking questions and comments from those in attendance.
It's hard to stress enough how important it is to hear from those guys tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because this legislative session is historic, you know, in terms of just the issues they're dealing with budget-wise. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we have, you know, somebody like Senator Woodward on the Joint Finance Appropriations Committee in a leadership position as he is just, it's priceless. So, I mean, of all people in the state, people who live in this district need to interface with their lawmakers, because these are people who can really make solid, impactful decisions, and the insights they're going to have about what's going on in Boise right now are invaluable. So if you can't go, I mean, definitely listen to this radio station, and I'll be there probably taking notes. So it'll be in the paper next week. But
well, I'll see you there. Yeah. And right outside at that same time, there is a scheduled, a demonstration or protest, just local action in response to what's going on right now in Minneapolis and in the state of Minnesota. So that will be going on at the county courthouse, which is directly across the street from Community Hall. So lots going on down there, and it'll be also interesting, I guess. I'm very interested to see how those two events going on adjacent to one another are going to interact.
I feel like Sandpoint's done a really good job with keeping these demonstrations very peaceable and welcoming, and I don't think there's going to be any conflict whatsoever. And actually, it might increase the number of people who go to the town hall. I mean, would hope that if you're already civically engaged on one issue, then you just walk right in and be civically engaged with another.
Warm up, have a cup of coffee, and yeah, listen to the.
It'll be a good day to be an American.
There you go. That's tomorrow at noon, as I said. And with that, it's time for Otto's Eclectic Mix. Zach, thank you very much for talking about this, and we look forward to talking about what happens at that city council meeting on Wednesday, and all sorts of other things that happen when we meet again next Friday here on North Idaho News of the Week. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for Otto's Eclectic Mix and Bird Note coming up at 9 o'clock. Thanks, Zach.
Thank you, Jack.